Okay, hello everyone. My name is Sunaina, and today I'm going to be talking about medicine and politics. This is done pretty much for the MedCast elective, and I just wanted to share a little bit of my thoughts. Try to keep it as unbiased and uncontroversial as possible, but it is medicine and politics. Just as a little overview, we're going to just be talking about the intersection between medicine and politics and how political decisions kind of impact healthcare access. We'll be talking about healthcare policy and legislation, different acts that have kind of shaped the way medicine is. We're going to be talking about physicians being advocates, specifically within the federal aspect of it. Some physician activism and different examples of like political engagement specifically for healthcare. I want to dive a little bit into public health and if healthcare is considered really a right or a privilege. Then finally, just wanted to tie it all together about like how to stay informed and engage and what the future of healthcare policies may look like. So just to kind of start us off, so the relationship between medicine and politics is extremely deeply intertwined. Political decisions essentially are the ones that are ending up shaping healthcare access, different patient outcomes, and the overall quality of medical services being provided across the country. Healthcare policies are not just limited to physicians and patients, but genuinely impact the entirety of the United States population. I'm just going to be talking about the United States in this terms of medicine and politics. So when I refer to the population, I'm talking about the population within the United States. Healthcare policies impact, like I was saying, pretty much the entire population. They influence everything from insurance coverage to different drug pricing. So it's not just the patient-physician interaction, it's pretty much everything. Being able to understand how legislative actions actually affect medical practice is really crucial for healthcare professionals, as well as the general public, because a lot of that has to do with how we vote. The intersection of healthcare and politics has been a topic of debate for an extremely long time, with policies that are affecting everything from government funding to specific individual patient rights. So, currently, in an era where medical advancements are constantly and very rapidly evolving, the role of government in regulating and supporting changes within the healthcare system has become even more critical than ever before. Healthcare policy and legislation, like we were talking about, has a very, very pivotal role in terms of determining the structure of the US healthcare system. A couple of the policies that I wanted to talk about, the first one I wanted to bring up was the Affordable Care Act made by Obama. Back during his presidency. So the aim of this act was pretty much to expand coverage to as many individuals as possible, regulate insurers, and try to lower healthcare costs across the country. This act has brought several benefits in terms of Medicaid expansion, protecting for pre-existing conditions such as diabetes, and allowing younger adults to actually remain on their parents' insurance plan for, I think it was 4 to 5 years longer than what was originally deemed possible. However, there are specific challenges that this act has brought on too. There's been an increase in premiums in terms of the insurance and your co-pays and how you're paying. The actual individual mandate penalty was put into play, but that was later repealed. And then finally, there's so much opposition from different sectors that have led to so much discussion about how effective this actually is. A lot of critics argue that while the ACA Affordable Care Act definitely increased coverage, it didn't necessarily sufficiently address the extremely high costs our healthcare system has. And a lot of insurers withdrew from the marketplace because of this, which really ended up limiting consumer choices, so patient choices. So while the intention was to genuinely decrease costs for all, the actual falling out of how this plan kind of fell out didn't necessarily do that. When you limit customer consumption or when you limit customer choices, it's kind of like the supply-demand chain. So when your supply goes down, your demand goes up, and the cost continues to increase. On the other hand, there are several proponents that highlight that millions of individuals actually gained coverage to healthcare access, and that preventative care access has improved significantly, which in the long run could reduce long-term costs for serious medical conditions. So it's hard to really assess. There's so many different opinions, so many different factors, but that's one of those government policies or government like initiatives that really almost kind of changed the face of medicine when it was implemented. Another huge area of debate are government-funded programs like Medicare and Medicaid versus private insurances. So just want to specify specifically what Medicare is and Medicaid is, because I used to get them mixed up all the time too. Medicare provides health care for individuals that are 65 and older and those with disabilities. So care for the older, while Medicaid AID serves lower income individuals with the combination of using state and federal funding. So Medicaid for lower income. Some like individuals across the country advocate for Medicare for all, arguing that a single payer system would pretty much lower the bulk of administrative costs and improve access everywhere. A lot of other critics also argue that such a huge shift in medicine and the healthcare system would place an extremely high undue financial burden on taxpayers across the country and really limit that competition within the healthcare marketplace. And competition is good. People thrive off competition. That means that there's a lot of advancements being made. That means that constant innovation is being made. But competition is good to a healthy degree. So in this concept, there that shift to a single payer system could definitely limit competition in the healthcare marketplace and also have millions of Americans that are taxpayers have to pay a significant amount upfront to genuinely go through this change. And in this time where the economy is struggling, a lot of individuals do not have the financial means to actually do this. So private insurances pretty much continue to dominate our healthcare insurance system, our healthcare system in general. But there are gaps in coverage. There's really high deductibles that have to be paid. And there's a lot of medical bankruptcies that genuinely highlight the flaws of a system that are heavily, heavily, heavily reliant on employer-based plans, which is the insurance companies. A lot of Americans find themselves uninsured or underinsured because of different employment changes, or just because they have exacerbating health conditions, or possibly because of their financial instability. There's so many different factors that can go into this. Another huge area of concern in terms of medicine and politics is pharmaceutical industry pricing. There have been several legislative efforts to really cap prices for different types of medications. An example for one of that would be the insulin prices. So many Americans suffer from diabetes, and insulin is a very, very common and the gold line standard for treatment in terms of diabetes. And when your insulin prices are skyrocketed through the roof, millions of Americans are suffering. And that's done through the pharmaceutical industry pricing. So these legislative efforts really try to cap insulin prices in order to highlight the need, which pretty much highlighted the need for greater regulation across all essential medications being used and to actually keep them affordable. If, a beta blocker is prescribed, millions of Americans are using beta blockers or ACE inhibitors for cardiovascular disease because it's the leading cause of death and leading healthcare risk factor across the country. And if medications and treatments cannot be provided to them because of financial efforts or because of financial burdens, that's a very, very large issue because pharmaceutical industries keep jacking up those prices. So for decades, pharmaceutical companies have justified these high prices by citing different research and development costs, but a lot of these prices are argued by several different critics that are extremely inflated beyond reasonable even margins. And that's not just seen in the United States, that's seen pretty much globally. For example, the opioid crisis has pretty much demonstrated the need for government intervention in controlling these prescription pharmacies and practices, and actually make the pharmaceutical companies held accountable. Companies like Purdue Pharma has faced several lawsuits over the course of a couple of years for their role in aggressively marketing opioids while genuinely downplaying their addictive nature. And that has boosted the opioid crisis more than anything. Policy changes such as prescription monitoring programs, a lot stricter regulations on opioid distribution have definitely aimed to reduce the pandemic and the epidemic. But there are still several challenges that remain in terms of balancing patients to have access to pain medication, but also reducing the risk of addiction. So many different innovative technologies are trying to be produced in order to help with pain medications, as that's probably the most commonly selling drug in over the counter, behind the counter, pretty much everywhere. And there's been so much technology in terms of trying to find something that is not as addictive as opioids or benzos or the more higher class drugs. But there are still high prescription costs that are continuing to burden the American consumers. And a lot of these American consumers are actually going to countries across the world to genuinely get affordable medications. Or if they're not able to travel, they just ration their prescriptions because of costs. I remember a personal example is when I was volunteering in a clinic in college, a lot of the patients that I would see, their sugars, like their blood sugars, would be skyrocketed. And they're known diabetics. They've been diabetics for almost like 20, 30 years now. They're prescribed insulin. They have every medication that you can think of. And it's not that they're not picking up their medications, they're taking it. It's just not enough. And they're not able to get more because they don't have the money to get more. So what they ended up doing is they ration out their insulin. They use it one day, they don't use it the next day. Pretty much half the month they use it, and the other half they don't. Or for example, if their one of their kids is sick, this is something that I saw a lot. Most of their money would go to that, and they wouldn't even end up picking up their insulin prescription because they didn't want to, they couldn't even pay for it. So they ration out how much they're using, and that's not necessarily what the medication is good for. You need to be taking that every day. There's specific doses, there's specific timings, and that is what really helps your blood sugar be in control. But if you're going to ration it out, it's not helping as much. And emergencies and different situations will definitely arise. In terms of traveling to other countries for affordable medications, that's done pretty much everywhere. For example, like I come from an Indian household, and a lot of family and friends, if they're not able to afford it here, they go to India and they get the same medications that they get here for almost half or maybe even a fourth of the price that we pay here. So that's a really common aspect of this pharmaceutical industry pricing and how many issues it's creating for individuals. Another topic that I wanted to discuss is lobbying. So the influence of lobbying is extremely significant in terms of shaping healthcare laws. There's so many different pharmaceutical and insurance companies that spend millions and millions of dollars to sway legislative decisions in order to genuinely benefit them from a more financial aspect. For instance, one of the lobbying efforts played a significant role in preventing Medicare from negotiating lower drug prices. Remember, Medicare is the elderly. So negotiating lower drug prices, raising questions about ethics of corporate influence in healthcare. So they weren't able to negotiate these lower drug prices because these insurance companies wouldn't allow them to for specifically Medicare usage. And that definitely raised questions in terms of how much the corporate world is influencing physicians' decisions and patient decisions in healthcare. A lot of political action committees, also known as PACs, are funded by healthcare giants, so to say, that really exert pressure on lawmakers to make sure that they continue to maintain policies that will continue to benefit their financial interests. And this usually happens at the expense of the patient's health. So this revolving door between government agencies and private healthcare firms continues to complicate matters. But as former regulators, they often take very specific and lucrative positions in these industries they once oversaw, which then continues to create conflicts and conflicts of interest in terms of policy development. So lobbying is a really particularly difficult issue just because the reality of the situation is most of the American government and different corporate, like healthcare, pretty much everything in this world is run on money. And a lot of these healthcare giants have so much money that they use to fund the government for, that they use to fund campaigns for, that they use pretty much to keep them to continue gaining and to continue having money and continue their financial interests. And that places a huge, huge sense of detriment onto a patient's health, because when the healthcare system is built around building money for these healthcare giants, a lot of times that means it's coming, like I said before, at the expense of the patient. They're no longer able to pay for their drugs. They're no longer able to pay for their medications. They're no longer even able to visit a doctor because they don't have access, they don't have money, and they're going through a significant financial burden. So there's a lot of conflicts of interest in terms of policymaking and healthcare. Physicians often find themselves on the crossroads of whether they should get involved, how can they get involved, and specifically the crossroads of medicine and advocacy. There's this constant debate that's always asking, should doctors get involved in political discussions? And a lot of people argue, a lot of critics argue that physicians should remain neutral in order to maintain that patient trust. So no matter what your background is, no matter what your political interests are, you can still feel like you have a physician that cares for you regardless of what's going on. On the other hand, a lot of people believe that advocacy is necessary, especially when these political issues are directly impacting patient care. A lot of specific issues, such as like racial disparities within healthcare, reproductive rights, vaccination campaigns, can really illustrate how medical professionals often try to navigate through that political landscape. Specifically, some examples that I had during the Black Lives Matters, the BLM movement, a lot of different healthcare professionals advocated for addressing systemic racism in medicine. They cited different racial disparities in maternal mortality, for example, in chronic disease prevalence. For example, cardiovascular death is extremely more common in the African American population compared to anything else, compared to any other population. And they also cited different disparities in COVID-19 outcomes based on their race, based on different races. So talking about this really helped put that data out there. Similarly, the topic of reproductive rights, when it comes to abortion laws, has placed physicians in extremely difficult positions. And there are states that have restrictive abortion laws, such as Texas and more states of that nature, a lot of different states actually, where providers face legal repercussions for offering a comprehensive reproductive health care system. So offering them abortions, offering them late-term abortions, early-term abortions, whatever it is, can actually get them sued, and they're just not allowed to practice that based on whatever state that they're in. On the other hand, the politicization of vaccines, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic, also highlighted how public trust in medical expertise can be easily undermined by political rhetoric and misinformation being spread. With all of these factors, it still continues to be a debate of whether physicians should really engage in political discussions and political, put themselves out there during political movements. The downside to it is if individuals from that political movement don't idealize with your beliefs, it might be difficult to form a relationship with them just because they don't feel safe with you. On the other hand, physicians are studying medicine and are consistently trying to provide for their patients. They know these patients and they know the healthcare disparities and they know the medical inequalities pretty much better than anyone. other than the patients themselves. And that those types of individuals actually having a right in policymaking and healthcare could make leaps and bounds in terms of actually reducing disparities in healthcare and reducing and improving healthcare access across all. There are some physician advocates that are really, really famous and common topics that a lot of individuals talk about. So some prominent physician advocates, like Dr. Paul Farmer, who pretty much co-founded Partners in Health, that has been able to promote global health equity. And another one, Dr. Atul Gawande, who has played a very active role in healthcare reform, has showcased that the impact physicians can have is way beyond just clinical practice. Dr. Atul Gawande is actually one of the reasons I went into medicine in the first place. I used to read his books growing up, like in high school, and he would talk about how like life as a surgeon, and how my initial book that I read with him was talking about how life as a surgeon, how calm, cool, and collected he had to be. And it was incredibly written and beautifully depicted. But later on, he had more books just about healthcare reform and how different ethnicities and racial groups suffer within the healthcare system that we have today just because their disparities are not even being recognized. And these are physicians that have played a very, very active role in terms of political discussions and trying to reform healthcare at the federal level. Their efforts have really demonstrated how medical professions can continue shaping healthcare policies that actually prioritize patient care and not continuing to interest the pharmaceutical companies. They've also showed how we can shape healthcare policies in terms of global health equity. However, like we were talking about before, engaging in political discourse is not without challenges. A lot of these physicians that I named, especially these two, have faced significant backlash and have had several professionalism risks in terms of because of their advocacy efforts. A lot of different hospitals and healthcare organizations actually have policies that restrict the political expression of their policies within the workplace. And that makes it really difficult to actually advocate for systemic change. So there's a lot of different factors that are involved. One of the most like pressing areas where medicine and politics really intersect is the balance between public health and individual rights. So this is a different topic, and this is kind of going back to this was really actually highlighted during the COVID-19 pandemic. So, medicine and politics, how does the balance between public health and individual right play out? During the COVID-19 pandemic, a lot of different governments implemented mask mandates, social distancing measures, and vaccination campaigns to really end the spread of the virus. While these measures were designed to protect public health and overall health, they also sparked a lot of debates about personal freedom and government outreach. A lot of different public health officials struggled to combat the misinformation that was put out there while also ensuring compliance with these safety measures and social distancing measures and mask mandates and vaccination campaigns, which really highlighted how difficult it was to enact effective policies in very politically acclimatized environments. Similarly, not just the COVID-19 pandemic, but reproductive health policies have had very, very significant implications for physicians, especially in states with more restrictive abortion laws. These regulations really impact the ability of healthcare providers to offer the most comprehensive form of reproductive care, which is what we were talking about prior, offering every sort of abortion that can exist. Which has raised concerns about medical ethics and patient autonomy. And patient autonomy refers to how much patients decide what they want in their life. And medical ethics referred to do no harm, beneficence, non-maleficence, justice, and equity. Beyond these issues, there are so many different public health interventions, such as smoking bans, sugar taxes, gun control policies, that also have a lot of political ramifications that can influence both medical practice and population health as a whole. Not only can influence, but have influenced, actually. So looking ahead, kind of coming to an end of all of this, I wanted to talk about the future of the medicine in politics. The future of healthcare policy remains quite uncertain, especially in the context of this upcoming election and different shifting political priorities. Very specific key issues such as insurance reform, pharmaceutical regulations, and public health funding, like we talked about, will likely shape the next phase of legislative action and healthcare policies across the nation. There has been continually rising healthcare costs and increasing demands for mental health services, with the constant ongoing public health crises such as obesity and the opioid crisis and different substance abuse. And with all of these issues, the need for very comprehensive and bipartisan, meaning involving both parties, need to come up with healthcare solutions as quickly and as effectively as possible. The need for these healthcare solutions is more urgent than ever. Staying constantly informed through using reliable resources such as medical journals, government reports, and policy think tanks is extremely essential for both healthcare professionals and the public. Social media is a huge form of how individuals get their medical knowledge now, making sure that you're looking at sources that are actually credible. When you Google something, making sure you're looking at sources that don't end in .com, looking for sources that end in .gov or that end in .edu that really showcase that this is a more reliable resource. In addition to all of this, active engagement is extremely important, whether that's actually through voting, through going to advocacy groups or professional organizations. It's extremely important. And I know voting has pretty much kind of been done for the president, but there's a lot of different elections that happen throughout the year in terms of your governor, the Senate, so many different aspects and so many different laws that are constantly being passed. So constantly checking when these elections are, when you can vote, looking up what policies that they're actually fighting for and what policies they're actually putting out there is extremely important because the population of America dictates what they want and really tells the federal government what they want. We vote so they can change stuff. So active engagement is extremely important. And this pretty much allows individuals to actually contribute to shaping healthcare policies that prioritize their own well-being and different patient well-being and different family members' well-being, while also prioritizing medical advancements and just balance all across. Physicians specifically can play a very crucial role by participating in policy discussions, like we were talking about with the other two physicians, participating in policy physicians and conducting a lot of research that actually reforms and informs legislation as a whole. On the other hand, they could also be collaborating with a lot of different policymakers to actually bridge this gap between medical expertise and government action. So there's so much that can be done and that should be done, especially within the next upcoming years as issues and healthcare costs continue to rise. Ultimately, at the end of the day, the intersection of medicine and politics pretty much highlights the need for an extremely balanced approach, an approach that prioritizes evidence-based policymaking while also considering all the ethical, economical, social, and so many different factors. By making sure that these informed decisions are taking place and constantly advocating for effective healthcare policies, a lot of different stakeholders can work towards a system that genuinely ensures the most accessible, the most high-quality medical care for all of America. As healthcare continues to evolve, the role of policy and decision-making, political decision-making in specific, is extremely important in terms of shaping the future of medicine, and it just cannot be ignored. This makes it extremely essential for medical professionals and the general public to genuinely engage in dialogue and action. Active engagement is what does it all. Thank you for listening. I hope I was able to provide a little bit of an insight in terms of medicine and politics and what issues are kind of being discussed today and what the future could look like. Thank you.